Hello and welcome to TC39ers. With us today, we have Robin Rickard, who is from Bloomberg and of course a TC39 delegate. And we have amazing stuff to discuss with Robin. And welcome to the show, Robin. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This is actually my first podcast ever, I think. So yeah, thank you.
Oh, that's nice. So we would like to know your journey into the tech world, right? What brought you into tech? What got you interested into tech and programming in general?
Yeah, I guess that's a fair question. I think I just got hooked on computers really early when my dad brought back like a 56K connection at home. And I just got to go online and see a bunch of wacky things that maybe I shouldn't have seen, but also mostly things that were super interesting. And I guess, really connecting with other people through internet was, difficult to me because I'm not an English speaker at the beginning. I'm French speaker, and a lot of people out there, like a lot of content out there, was really difficult to access for me, but I stayed with it. And I think I got very interested in like how software worked at first, trying to understand like how is that thing in front of me even working that seems completely alien to me. And I guess as a 8-10 year old, I was just this just like is a marvel of whatever. I cannot explain how this works. So I started going deep, right? I but without any clue of what I was doing. So I think I broke the first family computer quite fast. It took me 1 or 2 years to do it. I don't know how I did it in hindsight. I think I might have gone to the BIOS and enabled like the wrong options or something like this. Nice. But yeah, that's the idea. I just started fiddling with everything, trying to understand how does an operating system even exist? How does a computer connect to internet? And with time, I started like gathering small answers to those questions. And that was really amazing. And then after I broke the computer, I didn't have a computer for like six years or so, something like this. Wow. Which was pretty terrible. But that was fine in the interim, because computers were still very expensive. My parents got me a GameCube, so I got into video games at that moment, you know. Yeah. And then finally I got a computer back, and that's where interesting stuff started. I basically started playing with PHP at that time, which was just amazing, you know. I don't know, how did you start actually your foray into web development, Iman? That's I'm kind of interested if we had the same experience or not.
Yeah, for me it was I would say just viewing source of web pages and trying to see how it, more of curiosity driven development like you had, where you got curious and you broke your computer. That's a great experience too, and a great learning too. And then like I got into a few many programming languages like Perl, PHP, Python, and stuff. And
yeah, it was Node. Same thing. PHP, Python, Ruby. Actually, really enjoyed Rails. And in the meantime, I figured out like I needed to write JavaScript for my front end, and I quite liked it. And ended up discovering that there was a way to write JavaScript on the server side. And that was before Node, actually. There were like things back when I was much younger. I never played with it, but the Netscape server side thing. And I think when I was trying to play around with it, there was something called Aptana Jaxer, something like this. It was based on SpiderMonkey, and it was able to render synchronously a web page for you. Started playing with this, and obviously Node happened, and it was just amazing. So okay, I can do everything in JavaScript from now on. And I guess I was at university at that time, and what I really figured out quite soon though is that I could actually make money out of this. And so I started making websites for people that I knew through family or friends or just like this. And I mean, yeah, that was, I realized quite early that, yes, tech is actually quite interesting also in that sense. So it's a good thing that I'm passionate about this, because I can make money out of that also, which is, you know, nice side effect when you're in high school and university.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially when you make money out of things what you like doing. That's a good place to be in. And I guess that's what brought you to Bloomberg as well. Let's talk about what you do at Bloomberg.
Well, I mean, I got to Bloomberg not necessarily for the money, but for the job, right? Because it's interesting ultimately what we're doing. And there, I'm working in software infrastructure, which means that I basically work for other developers that are writing JavaScript in the company. And it's thousands of developers that I'm working for internally. And so every choice that we make is basically leveraged everywhere in the rest of the company. So I don't know, for example, I'm working on build tools. If I manage to, as part of things, I'm working on build tools, developer tools, that includes also CLI tooling, VS Code extension, things like this, you know. We have a framework and we need to provide tools to support that framework. And this is where I'm working on. So let's say I have build tool and that build tool could be faster. If I get like 1 second faster at building a project, that 1 second faster is going to be multiplied by the number of engineers that we have. And it's going to be multiplied by the time that every engineer is building a project per day. And so all of this, it just compounds and it makes huge impact and make them iterate faster on their respective products. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not just about the money. It's about the impact that we create. And of course, getting money for things that we love doing is always an added bonus.
Yeah, and I think ultimately I was always passionate about creating tools for other developers, because when even in university, I was interested in like final products and things like this. I used to work a bit for startups and where it was really focused on products. But here, what I'm doing right now is really what I kind of wanted to do. Is I'm working for other developers to provide tools for other developers. I understand their need because I am myself a developer, and it's really something that drives me here, which is giving good quality experience, enjoyable tools. Tools that sparks joy to people is just amazing, and I love using good tools, so I want to make good tools.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of the human evolution when we were able to make tools, right? That's what differentiated us from our ancestors. So yeah.
Maybe I'm an extremely big caveman of technology, probably in that sense.
That's nice. So what brought you into TC39? Let's talk about that part of your journey.
Yeah, that's a long story, actually. As I said, like, I got interested in, I started doing everything JavaScript, I guess, back in 2014, 2015. And we all know what happened in 2015. There was this new version of the standard that was published called ES6 or ES2015. And yeah, a bunch of new features just appeared in JavaScript. JavaScript before was a bit clunky. It's like, okay, I can deal with this because like I took the time to learn what is prototypal inheritance, all of those things, you know. And then ES6 comes and like, we have all of those new features. And we had Babel also at that time that was actually doing that translation. And I learned about that. Okay, there is a process that brought us those new features. And there are new features that are going to continue coming in. And that's was the time where I got my attention really strongly. Yes, we just had this major evolution, but more stuff was coming up. And I think I started following a bit the stage process at that time. I didn't know at all how TC39 worked, but I knew that there was this standardization body, TC39. They have like different stages. As a student at that time, obviously I was running my code in, I was transforming my code in Babel with a stage zero transforms completely recklessly, which don't do this. It's a terrible idea. It's I was like running this for 1 week or so. Then I figured out it was a bad idea. I went to stage one. I managed to stay a month or so on stage one before figuring out maybe that's also a bad idea. In general, if you want to down-level your features, I would say down-level only if it's in stage four, but that's after having been at the committee for multiple years now. But yes, so that was my first interactions with like understanding what TC39 was. And I guess, yeah, when I joined Bloomberg, I didn't know at first that Bloomberg was involved in TC39 when I joined. And then I rapidly found out there were some people that were going regularly to meetings. Obviously, our chair, who also worked at Bloomberg, Rob Palmer, was already going to meetings at that time. Andrew Paprocki, who's coming sometimes to meeting now, and also Robbie Pamley, I think were the people at the time that were interacting with the committee. I was like, I want to do this. I look at them and I was like, I want to do what they're doing because this seems super interesting. And every time they talked about TC39 with each other, it was sometimes I got to just hear and participate in those discussions because regularly in Bloomberg, we sync up with the JS community at Bloomberg and say, okay, what do you think about upcoming proposals? What's your point of view here? So we gather point of views and it's really interesting. So I was in the audience and I was hearing them talk about this. And honestly, yeah, I wanted to do that. And I guess at that point, I couldn't really participate because I didn't really have, you know, a mission that I could go to TC39 to work on. Mm-hmm. So I guess what happened is that one day I discussed with Daniel Ehrenberg who at the time was at Egalia and now is working at Bloomberg as well. Dan talked to me about, yes, this old article from Brendan Eich, who created JavaScript, that talked about the article was called Harmony of My Dreams and was explaining and laying out a vision of what actually ES6 would look like. And obviously not everything made it into the language, into ES6. There was a specific section. And if you look at this article, you'll find out that Brendan was talking about some kind of deeply frozen objects or something that's very similar to today's record and tuple with exactly the same syntax, actually, with the hash in front of it. And so Dan was talking to me about this article. I was like, yeah, I used to play around with Clojure scripts, and I really like enjoyed working with immutable data structure at the time. Do you okay, so Dan said to me, like, would you want to try to put that into JavaScript? Why not? Like, and so, yeah, I guess 1 or 2 days after that, I came up with Rick Button, my colleague. We came up with a first, like, very crazy draft that was, I guess, that became our stage zero a README draft that we then presented to the committee. And so that was back in 2019. And so, yeah, I started participating in TC49 in 2019. And my first meeting, we went to present Stage Zero Record and Tuple. And that was a very, very scary thing. And but everything went well. So because, yeah, the committee is cool, actually. And this is this was a good experience. And then, yeah, we just continued working on this. And
yeah, that's awesome. Your journey from ES6, right? You reminded me it was in 2015, which was almost like 7 years ago now. And that's nice.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Go on.
Yeah, and I remember that I think it was in Salesforce in 2019 when Records and Tuple was pitched. And
Actually, that was in Bloomberg. Bloomberg was hosting. That's why it was actually less scary because it was at home, quote unquote. But yes, that made it, since we were the organizers and we were in an office that I knew, it was not like complete. I wasn't completely freaking out, but yeah.
That's nice. Yeah, we did the touch base bit on what were the origins of Records and Tuple proposal. But can we dive a bit more deeper into what Records and Tuples are and why do we need it and what were some of the learnings you gained during the progression of this proposal?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way I would describe Records and Tuple, and to be clear, this is still a stage two proposal. So things that I might say today, and we're currently in August 2022, might change in the future. So this is important. Before we get to stage three, the proposal could still change. But right now, as I'm speaking, record and tuple are primitive value types in the JavaScript language that can contain other primitive value types. So a record, for example, will look like an object. So it can map string keys to another value type. And a tuple is a sequence of other value types. And this is defined recursively since, for example, a record can contain a value type, it can contain another record, or it can contain another tuple, and likewise with tuple. So because they are value types, they don't have an identity, which means that they won't be able to reference objects from them. So you cannot put an object inside of a record or a tuple, but this is a known limitation, and there are ways around it, and I can go into this later if you're interested. But the short gist of it is that since they behave as values, they also have an equality of a value. So since they don't have an identity on like objects, if you're going to use a triple equal operator between two records that have the same key value pairs in them, the triple equal operation is going to tell you, yes, those two records are the same. Even if they are created at two different places in your program, and the same goes with tuples. Obviously, if you have the same sequences on both sides of the operation, it's going to tell you that those things are equal by value. Triple equal is not the best way that I would be using records and tuples. It's probably using records and tuples as map keys. For example, today, if you want to encode, so I work on build tooling. So one thing that I do often is actually represent paths. Paths today, I have to use strings to use paths as keys because if I use an object, since each object has an identity, it's not a good key to index things. So what I'm doing essentially is I'm taking a string, and the string is a key for that path, and then I can map it to anything that I want to map to that path. The problem with strings, as you might know, and especially representing paths with strings, is that different operating systems have different ideas of what a path is. For example, I have to support Windows. Windows has the good idea of actually using backslashes instead of forward slashes. So we ended up having strategies to normalize paths across different operating systems and blah, blah, blah. But what if I could just use an array to represent the sequence of like path components of my path, right? And well, the array again will have an identity, so I'm not going to be able to use it. What I can do now is, if we have record and tuple, is use a tuple to represent the path and use it as the key. And whenever I create that path, it's just like whatever the method I'm using to generate that path, it's going to match things because it's going to match things by values instead of identity. And I guess that's the main thing that we're trying to do with record and tuple here. I hope I didn't go too deep into the rabbit hole.
No, it's really interesting how you put things on, how you compare it to an array or an object, and what is the main objective here, and using them as keys and stuff. But if we could give a hint to our listeners on where they could start using recursion tuples. I know it's still under flag, probably it's in Nightly and Chrome as well, maybe. But if they were to experiment and know more about it, where should they go, and what would be the use case that they could start trying recursion tuple?
So I'm glad you asked, because we want feedback on recursion tuples, because it's stage two. It's the time we want feedback, actually, because once it goes to stage three, things are getting a bit more, you know, decided. So if you want to try out record and tuple, and I imagine you can put links into your podcast, right?
Yes.
Yes. So go to the links in the podcast, and you will find the link to the playground for record and tuple. You just click on this, and you will be brought to a small editor that's going to show you an editor area where you can write JavaScript with records and tuples. And on the other side, you have a console, and you can even fiddle with some DOM and write applications. We had some people in the community experiment with React and records and tuples. For example, records and tuples are interesting for memorization purposes if you're using React. Because, you know, in React, it's going to shallow compare what you're giving your components. So the advantage is that if you change an object that you're passing to your component inside the object, it's not necessarily going to detect there is a change in the object. But if you pass a record, since the record is immutable and the only way to change it is to create a copy, even if you're making like a deep change in it, well, React will figure out you have a different record. So it's interesting. Play with it. Try any kind of library on it. It's probably going to be very interesting.
Yeah, the immutability bits is where it kind of gets more interesting. And yeah, for all the listeners, definitely go try on the playground. And the committee is always open for a lot of feedback.
Yes, and yeah, if you need to give feedback, obviously there is the proposal repository that I will also make sure is linked, and there is an issue section, and you can also always ask me questions on Twitter. I try my best to answer, but yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Yeah, I know it can get more intense as we, you know, go into the depths of the specification and talk about records and tuples. But in the interest of time, I always kind of get to this final question for our you know, guests about, hey, what is your favorite proposal and why?
I mean, the obvious answer would be record and tuple. But that's an easy answer, and I don't like it. What I want to say, and I listened to other episodes of your podcast, actually, and it's a very boring answer, because many people are answering the same, but it's a really good proposal. It's temporal, and temporal is about fixing dates, because dates in JavaScript today are kind of dodgy, right? One thing that we don't like about dates, for example, is that they are mutable, and temporal is immutable. They are based on objects, not primitives like records and tuples, but they have the advantage of, like, when you created a temporal object, you cannot change it. You need to derive a new one. So that's a great property. I'm glad they thought about this It's really amazing. And I mean, who never had, I mean, I previously, before working on what I'm working on at Bloomberg, I was working on telemetry developer tools, which sometimes involve looking at logs that might come from, I mean, not necessarily logs, but telemetry that's going to come from another time zone, right? And I'm in London, I'm looking at something that's been taken in New York, for example, and we had to make some crazy stuff with dates to do the time zone conversions and everything. While we don't necessarily have to do this with temporal, where you can really, I mean, it's a bit verbose in some ways, but it's really enjoyable because you almost write, it's almost like you're writing plain English to do those time zone conversions, and it's really cool. And yeah, it's going to change the game in handling different time zones, different locals as well, displaying dates, displaying durations, which is not an easy thing either. And so I'm really glad this is happening. And yeah, the champion group behind Temporal has been amazing. It has some of my colleagues, notably Jason Williams, Phil Dunkel. I know there are a lot of folks from Igalia as well, Philip Cimento, that presented last time the update. I mean, it's a very complex problem because what they're doing is sometimes uncharted territory, and they're actually trying to add new stuff to the IETF date formats, because Temporal is actually pushing the limits there, and it's great. I mean, when I'm talking about pushing the limits, is that Temporal will be able to handle a different kind of calendars, right? We have our own ISO calendar that we're used to interacting with, but I mean, it's great. You can have, I think, Japanese calendars, I mean, any kind of, I mean, the Occidental culture is not the only one, and it's great to be able to support more stuff that comes from different backgrounds. So in this, I think it's great that they've been working on this, and it's also the committee that, and the internalization people in the committee that pushed them to also look at calendars, I remember, in the first place. So I think that, for me, that also shows that the process works. Yes, Temporal has been a long time coming and people are waiting for it. But I think the wait is worth it, because ultimately, you know, once this will ship, it will really do everything people would ever dream of in terms of manipulating dates. I mean, at least is my opinion, that I didn't dream of anything else. Maybe we'll need another proposal to handle other planets or something like this. What do I know? But but yeah, at this point, it's pushing the boundary a bit farther than what this proposal is set to achieve.
Absolutely. As you said, yeah, Temporal is one of the top favorite proposals in this podcast series. And of course, probably we might need one for the Martian time zone once we hit Mars.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that was already a discussion last time with another guest.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, it's no surprise that Temporal was on your list. And it's also nice to see in the TC39 agenda page, we have a small snippet which kind of quickly converts the agenda time to your local time zone using Temporal.
Yeah.
Which is just like three lines and you're there. You know, you can know it in your local time. And that's
yeah, it's so nice. You know, we have a line of JavaScript that we use. You know when the meeting will happen. And it's very clear what it's doing. And this is what I like about it. But yeah, sorry, I'm not being original here. It's...
Not at all. We are all connected and we share the common goal. And if you all like the same thing, then it's not a problem at all. And it was awesome to have you here on the show. And I'll create a post with all the links and of course your Twitter handle for all the listeners to pester you with more questions and feedback.
Yeah. Please send the questions. Always learning new stuff. Actually, it's great interacting with community that way.
Yeah. Awesome. And thank you and have a good evening.
Thank you.